So anybody, מישהו שרוצה תרגום לעברית, it's ממש בסדר, שם, אלון, חיוך, מוכן לתרגם בעברית. So the title of the talk is The Fire of Desire and the Coolness of Peace. So we experience the world, and that means the inner world and the outer world, as definitely not really peaceful, disturbing most of the time. And there are all the time signals, signs, messages from the inner world and from the outside world of what I need, what I'm missing, what I have to have, what needs to be done. And we begin to feel that most of our life we are actually busy with coping, itmodadut, that that's what we're doing with our life. And it's most of the time is like that. That when we're a baby, there was hunger, and we cried, and then came tzitzi, and then there was peace and quiet for a while, and then the next time. When we're an adult, kind of the tzitzi has disappeared, and most of the time we're hungry, and a little bit of the time we're totally satisfied. And partly it's because the basic hunger for milk of the baby has changed into a constant hunger of the self. So we start with the hunger of the body, and we move into hunger of the me. And the hunger of the me is endless, is never enough. We never get enough. The self is constantly looking, busy, what's wrong, what I have to have, what I'm missing, what I need to know in order to be better, what needs to be done, what might happen. So I'm busy with that. So something is basically dissatisfying, unsatisfying in this self that is needing all the time. And it's, we don't know quite where to find the end of it. How many times we feel, you know, someone on the freeway, Ayalon, cuts us off. And who doesn't feel, oh, how can they do that to me? But how much do we realize that's just our pride, our ego? It has no basis. What actually happened is someone went like that. That's all. And we could say, oh, someone's gone like that. Or we could say, how can they do it to us? They cut me off, they disturb. We have a choice all the time. And mostly we go into the place of the dissatisfied self. So this desire is not a problem. Desire is nature. The Buddha was certainly hungry. The baby is hungry and needs milk. There isn't a problem with that. The Buddha didn't say we should all be kind of without desire, just kind of totally non-natural, somehow no desire. We cannot. Desire is fine. If we don't have desire, we wouldn't go to lunch. We need lunch. So the tummy is telling us, go to lunch. And the tummy would tell the Buddha, go to collect alms, go to the village to collect your lunch. But the trouble is it doesn't stop there. If it was just desire, hunger in the tummy, if there was lunch, we'd put lunch in the tummy. If there was no lunch, we would just see it as an experience and it would come and go. End of story. But it really builds into craving. So what happens? There's a track. Senses, hushim, knowing things. Ice cream. Lunch. Desire arises. It turns into the need for satisfaction, the need for to be satisfied. It grows. It becomes connected to our happiness. We are not happy if we don't get the hunger satisfied. We will become unhappy, miserable. The self will feel constantly something is missing, I need, I have, it doesn't happen. And then we put it all onto the world. The world has to give me lunch. The world, we throw it all on the world. The world must supply me with what I need. Where is the next? Where do I need to go? Ah, there. That's what I need. Now that's what I need. Ah, the world. We expect the world to keep supplying us with our needs. So expectations, we build story around it. It's happening, it's not happening. Magiali, I'm not getting what I need. We build story and we expect from the world. And one of the most powerful suttas, one of the most powerful texts in the whole of the Pali canon, I think, is the speech of the Buddha on called the fire, the speech of the fire, or the Sermon of the Fire, Sutta of the Fire, Esh. And he basically said, a human being is burning, 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 burning with desire, burning with need, burning with trying to fix things, burning with getting things better, burning with expectations from the world, burning with using up the world. And it just keeps going. And so it's never enough. And that's the problem with desire. I read a small piece that did some research. How many days people are happy after buying a new car? 3 days. That's all. And of course, it turns into a tragedy very easily. How pride turns into a war that can kill millions of people, like the First World War, just based on European pride of the generals and the empire builders that felt threatened. No one was really hurting anybody, it's just pride. How can they? We don't want them to be powerful, so we'll fight them. And millions of people die from ego. And today we have a similar problem. Millions of people are at risk because of greed, khamdanut. Because we must have this, we must have drive, we must go, we want, we must have air conditioning, we must burn petrol, we must live. I've just been to America for a tour. I came back a couple of weeks ago, and I was on the freeways in California driving, and I must say I felt quite despaired, because I realized this world can never ever change its way of life. Nobody would be ready to change the way of life here. I just felt it impossible. The whole structure of civilization is built on greed and more And I don't see, even in the dialogue, nowhere in the climate change dialogue of the politicians, of the society, is there a discussion of making do with less, how we can live with less. This is not what the United Nations is busy with at all. Nobody's busy with that. Can we make do with less? So it moves from craving, by the way, in California, last time I was there, I saw a huge sign on the next to the road with a McDonald's hamburger, which had kind of layers, shichvot, because one after another, kind of how would one would eat such a thing? But underneath, big, big letters, crafted for your craving. This could be the title of this talk. So desire is natural. Craving is what is built out of it. This is the fire that burns us and is now burning the world. So it moves from craving to clinging. The movement of the fire is desire that builds and builds, and we identify with it, we grow in it, we expect, we want more, we don't stop. Goes into the self, the neediness, the what's missing, what I need. And then it moves into clinging, attachment, herzuyot. And there are basically four kinds of attachment in the tradition. The first is attachment to the senses, chushim, what I have to have, food and drink, and sex. But it's more than that. It's about relationships, and it's about wanting people to be support us, giving have nice experiences, and wanting things to be better, and through the senses. There's a nice piece in Winnie the Pooh, which is really expressing this. Winnie the Pooh would climb a tree to look for honey, and then the branch broke, and he dropped one branch, and he said, oof, and he dropped another branch and said, oh my God, and he dropped another branch and said, oh dear, and another branch and said, oh, man, that's difficult, and he boom, 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 all the way down, and when he got to the bottom with a big bang, he said, it's all because I want honey so much. And that's the... So our senses basically are the first attachment. We want honey so much. A second attachment is views and opinions, which often we don't notice how much we are attached to the way we look at things, that we believe our thoughts to be true. Or you can say, no, I don't have strong political views, I'm okay, I listen to other people. But what about thoughts that we have about ourselves? I am no good at something, or I am less than I should be, or I am this kind of person, or I have this kind of problem, I have this kind of issue, which we then believe as true. And we spend half our money going to psychologists. But is it true, or is it a view that we have of ourselves? So I'm not saying it's easy to get out of that, but we should just know that that's one of the great places of attachment. Attachment to the views, things we think are true, we assume halachot, we assume they're true, and we go through life like that. That's the way things are. That's obviously right. Then yes, I believe that, sure. I used to work on projects, a lot of projects with Muslim professionals in the north of Israel on Tzimchei Marpeh, a lot of connections with that was my work. But any time I mentioned anything about God,
wow, I got it back.
They couldn't believe that there was somebody that didn't believe there was a God up there. They just couldn't understand it. Impossible. They thought I was cuckoo somehow. Beliefs in right and wrong. What is right? What is wrong? They're powerful beliefs. The third of the attachments is in sila. It's called sila, but it really means in rituals, in practices, in behaviors that we feel are right, culture that is a strong power that makes us act in certain ways. And we can see it in retreats. If as soon as we start getting, because a retreat, like for example, silence, shtika, kadosh. So silence is really, really helpful, but it's not kadosh. So we do that with the spiritual life. We can turn different things in our spiritual life to become kadosh, to become holy, to become attached. We can't. What about being vegan? I think it's great not to eat animal products. It's great. But it can be a bit of a problem if we're attached to the view that being vegan is the right, the only, the best, the number one, and people who are not vegan are problematic, including the Buddha, by the way, because he wasn't vegan. So we have to be aware of the way we get attached to views. And the fourth is attachment to the self. Who I am, what I am, identity, big one, big time. The way I look at things, the way I want things, the way I need things, this self. I won't go into it now, it's a huge story. But it's very, very strong. Very hard to undo that. So how do we practice with desire that grows into craving and then grows into attachment? What do we do? So there is a case for some real behavioral change. And when the Buddha said to his meditative practitioners, you want liberation, so there's one thing you have to do. Get out. He called it going out or going forth. He didn't say go back, he said go forward. Leave your house, leave your family, leave your comforts, and you go out and sleep under the trees with just robes and an umbrella, medicines, that's about it, and a bowl. Nothing. Leave possessions, leave everything. Okay, so I don't think we're in that category. I don't think we're ready for that. But we can appreciate simplicity as a first step in our spiritual life. It doesn't mean that a rich person cannot, like Jesus said, a rich person cannot enter the kingdom of heaven, but the Buddha didn't say that. In itself, a rich person can reach awakening just like a poor person, but it may be more difficult because the chances of attachment are more. We do need to simplify our life. And I think it's important that one of the messages of a retreat is that we can do with less. And it's okay. And the Buddha did say, okay, not to be a monk, but he said, if you want to go and practice, at least give up the hunger for need and the neediness for the world. Just get simple, renunciation, vitur. And I think we need to do that. And then there's a joy in that, of not needing. So when I occasionally take my needy grandchildren to to a canyon. And it's so nice to go through, to go past every single store, and there is nothing interesting for me there. And I feel joy of renunciation. Nothing there that interests me whatsoever. Oh. I don't like the place very much, but... So the joy is in needing less, and that is external, chitzoni. It's the way we live, it's helpful. As a sort of beginning place, it's helpful to do with less, it's helpful. But that's just the starting point. And then we really need to work with desire. And working with desire is really feeling the expression and the experiences of the way desire not only comes to us in lunchtime when the bell rings here in the hall, and then we remember, ah, lunch, and suddenly we're hungry. And to be with that experience, great, no problem at all. But hunger has many levels. And if we're really with the experience of hunger, we can begin to see how it can control us, how it builds story, how it be, what's the lunch going to be? I wonder today whether there'll be this, and I wonder, well, yesterday it wasn't so good, but today maybe it's better. I'm really, really missing the some cheese, I'm really missing a little bit of, why not this. You know, we can see the way it builds into a story so quickly and easily. So hunger is not just an experience inside the tummy. It builds, and we need to watch that without blame. Just without blame, but watching it carefully, the way it builds up. And the way it leads to things. How it leads to restlessness, how it creates fire, just like the Buddha said. We're burning with desire, with need. We become restless. We can't find peace because something is missing, and we are missing something, and we need something, and it's just making us agitated. And we feel pressure, and we feel disturbance. That's the fire. And we need to just see it and observe it. And from there, we bring it into wisdom. It teaches us things. The wisdom is the wisdom of our vulnerability, pegiut. That we are fragile, we are shavrir, we are like the Theravada text that says our life is like we're like a seed balancing on a needle. We're just here for a moment in this body. We are vulnerable. And it teaches us our vulnerability, the hunger, the way we build restlessness, the way we build neediness, the way we build, or neediness is also aversion. I don't want this, this is no good, this is not helpful, this one I don't want, this one. It's the same. The hunger goes in two directions, wanting and not wanting. I forgot to say that, but it's the same. Not wanting unpleasant experiences, not wanting hunger. And so we have a chance to convert that intimacy with desire into wisdom. And one of the places is vulnerability, and another place is, what do I really need? What is it that I really need? Not what the self thinks it needs, or what I'm told that I should have, and what people tell me it's right that I have, but what is really my real need in this world? And it's an exploration. We can move there. But even deeper than that, meeting our desire also shows us that we are interconnected with all, with everything. Why do we need to eat? Because we are not isolated, autonomous beings closed in a box. We need to eat because we're part of all beings, we're part of life. Life needs to feed us, we need to feed life. We are not closed, we are open. We need to, a flow of water and air and food and thoughts and experiences coming into us and coming out of us. We are interconnected with all life. So all life is supporting all life. Every being is supporting every other being. And we ourselves, in the end, we support a few tola'im. They enjoy it. But it actually helps us to see our dependence, our tlut. The Buddha said, all a human being is in the end is a load of daisa walking about. It's said a few times. And it's such a good reminder. That's all we are. We're a load of porridge walking about. And so that's another wisdom that we see, we can feel from our hungers, from our needs. And it brings us also the wisdom of compassion. Because if we see we are like all beings, we're not different from amoeba. There is nothing different between us and amoeba. Amoeba will go to sugar, so will we. And it just makes us have a bigger view, a compassionate view of all beings, because we're all needy in the same way, and we're all dependent on each other, and we're all dependent on having things in order to keep alive and survive. Ahisardut, all beings depending. So this is an insight, important. And we, again, no blame about desire. Desire is natural, and sometimes even the way we build craving can be okay for us. And here, for example, is desire for liberation. And the Buddha said, desire for liberation is the best desire that you can have. Still, in the end, let it go. Still, in the end, you don't need it. When you've gone to the other side, or then you can let go the desire to go to the other side. If you go to the park, you want to go to the park, you arrive in the park, where's the wanting? Gone. You want lunch, when you're eating lunch, where's the wanting? Gone. So it goes. Desire is only temporary. And slowly, we can feel that even our desire for liberation, and it's something that Simi mentioned earlier, our desire for freedom, our desire for a certain experience in this retreat, our desire for more peace, slowly, that itself can dissolve. And we feel instead shlemut, completeness. Things are perfect as they are. That's a profound understanding that we can experience from the wisdom of seeing the desire and the pain of it, the fire of desire, and letting go and letting go and letting go. Not stopping desire, as I say, it's natural, but letting go of the fire of what it does. So when the Buddha didn't get lunch, I'm sure it made absolutely no difference. There was hunger, hunger changed to another experience, no lunch, or yes, lunch. And the Buddha was really encouraging, the more or less the last words he said before he died were, be an island to yourself. In other words, feel your steadiness. Feel that you're not all the time swept by needs and by something missing. Feel yourself steady in life. Of course you need to eat. Of course you need medicine. Of course you don't want to get knocked over by a bus in the street. We look after ourselves, and the Buddha looked after himself. He also had a doctor. No problem with that. But how are we with our life? And that is the word viveka, to be autonomous, to be steady in the middle of our life and not all the time burning with neediness. So the work continues when desire, when clinging or craving goes to clinging, when the neediness moves into attachment. And Ajahn Amaro, who was taught here in Israel a few years ago, he had a nice image. He said, the Buddhists walked around with a bowl, and what's important for them was not to be choosy. Oh, what's in the bowl? No, I preferred the other one. I preferred, this rice doesn't look very good. I'll have better rice. Maybe I'll go to that family, they'll bring me better rice. To whatever arises, whatever is put in the lunch bowl, that is it. And Ajahn Amaro said, our mind can be just like the bowl, the lunch bowl of the monks. Whatever arises in the mind is good enough. We don't start choosing, this should be better, this should be this should be that. It's like the bowl of the monks, our mind. Whatever comes in, that's what's coming in. That's okay. So attachment, working with attachment is a real sense of not giving food to the holy neediness, not feeding our neediness, not feeding our attachment, not feeding our hersuyot, not giving them space, not giving them kadosh, kedusha, holiness. You may know already, there's quite a famous little story about an American Indian woman that was asked by a kid, how is it there's so much violence in the world? And she said, well, a human being has two wolves, shnei ze'evim, inside them, a violent one and a peaceful one. And the kid said, so what do you, become peaceful? How do you kill the violent wolf? What do you do? And she said, it's very, very simple. You just stop feeding the violent one. Just don't give it food. You feed the peaceful one. So it's our attitude with attachment is about feeding. So we just don't feed the attachments. Thorns only hurt us if we grab them. A mountain is only heavy if we lift it. If we don't lift the mountain, it's not heavy. If we don't grab the kotzim, they don't hurt us. So we let go. We constantly know to let go. And it's a sense of not needing, the needs don't need to build in us attachment. We don't need. In the, some of the words used in the Buddhist tradition for non-attachment is dispassion, or disenchantment. And disenchantment in Hebrew, I think, is ikasmut. Not being in the spell of things. To break the spell. That I'm okay without this. Everything is fine as it is. I don't need to feed that hitmakrut, that attachment. But the main way that we can do this is in meditation practice and in our spiritual practice, when we see directly, not conceptually, but straight, you know, Bhagava Inaya, we see directly that everything has a short shelf life. Chaye Madaf, Mo'od Katsar. Everything passes by. What it is that we attach to is gone before we can grab it. Everything passes by. Anicca. Our experiences of change, our experiences of flow. We're a different person every time we get up out of the room here. We're not the same person that came into the room. We're a different person when we left the room. All our ta'im, everything is changed every minute. Our thoughts are passing by. So what are we going to get attached to? Everything goes by itself. So we need to see that attachment is a kind of a trap. And if we look carefully, everything passes. The things that give us pain are gone, are going. The things that give us trouble, going. The whole achor bifnim, shall we feel, mashu chaser, something missing. It's just an experience itself goes, changes. So we really need to see our inner world as dynamic and free, and there's nothing there to get stuck to. There's no reason to be poo with the honey. It all passes, it all changes, it all goes by itself. We don't need to get rid of things in us that we think are difficult. We don't need to get rid of things. Everything goes by itself. And we can really see that. It's true that there's some attachments that are positive up to a point. So people always say, look, how are you Buddhist? I mean, you mean I shouldn't be attached to my children? What are you talking about? Understand, yes, there is an issue there. Some attachments, as ordinary human beings, there are some positive attachments that we have that may be helpful. But in the end, even those can go. For example, there is a kind of a conflict between attachment and love. And our relationship can be based on love and not on attachment. And if the love is up here, the attachment can be down there. Maybe that's ideal. Maybe for us, the love is here, attachment is here. But what I'm saying is, in the end, attachment isn't helpful under any circumstances because it's painful. It gets us stuck. And it's a fire. And if we lose what we're attached to, we cry. And there's a freedom which is non-attachment. So desire, the burning, the fire that the Buddha talked about, of desire, clinging, craving, clinging, attachment, all of that can be put out. Nirvana is kibui esh. That's the translation of nirvana. It's the cooling down. It's where we just don't let the fire burn us up. Of neediness, of wanting, of chaseli, of what I have to have, what I'm missing, what's wrong, what needs to be better, what I need to do to be better, to be comfortable. All that is going out of the fire. So in the Four Noble Truths, the Buddha taught, we don't need to hunt for nirvana. We just need not to disturb it. We don't need to hunt for freedom and liberation. We just need not to disturb it by the fire. When the fire goes out, liberation happens by itself. When we're not attached, freedom appears. We will just know freedom. It's not because we hunt for freedom. So peace in us will arrive when we don't disturb it, when we don't interrupt it. It will happen by itself. We will discover peace. I mean, just take a small example. If we're angry, the anger arises, the anger has reason, senses, needs, protection, defensive, reactivity, the whole chain, anger, and then anger stops and is finished. If we really look, when anger is stopped and finished, there is a space of freedom where there was anger before and it filled up our consciousness. When that stops, consciousness is free. For a moment, angerless, you know, minus anger. So there's a moment of minus anger. So if we think about the whole life like that, then peace is what appears when we're not disturbing it. We don't have to hunt for peace, we just have to not disturb it, not interrupt it, not stop it. So awakening is not something that we can get. We need to let go of non-awakening, samsara. I'll say it again, awakening is not something that we can get. It happens when we let go of non-awakening, conditioning, fire. And it happens by itself. It's in life. If we let go into life without our need to control and to have and to do things with life, but we just let go into life. And interesting, in the Jewish myth of the Garden of Eden, Gan Eden, there is two trees. And I really like this myth. And the tree of neediness is the tree of Toblerone that we ate, and ate the fruit here, bifnim, here inside. We ate it. But the other tree is the tree of life. And if we choose the tree of life, no problem. We're in Garden of Eden. We stay there. If we choose the tree of Toblerone, we're out. Too bad. Trying to get back in again. Going to 100 meditation retreats to get back into Gan Eden. And we forgot that all we need to do is sit under the tree of life. Okay, thank you. So we'll take 1 or 2 minutes of quiet.